It's the Reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar. Because you can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P.
R-H-A-P.
Reality TV Happy Hour. Reality TV Happy Hour.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Reality TV Happy Hour. My name is Jordan Parhar, and as always during the BB18 season, I'm here with you to talk about some Big Brother on robhasawebsite.com. Today, it's a special day. It's Independence Day in the United States, so happy Independence Day, happy 4th of July to everybody in the home of the brave and the home of the free in the United States of America. We love you very much. It's a great day. It's super exciting. We're all here to talk about some Big Brother. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're talking about the live feeds only with the live feed correspondents. And let's introduce them for you if you are new to the show. First, he's a man who I actually had a dream about last night. It's the great Taryn Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen. Taryn, how are you?
Oh, my. Well, I'm very curious about this dream, a little bit apprehensive. I also ate way too much today, so feeling a little sluggish. And then also feeling very paranoid. I feel like, Alex has been looking shifty all night, and I'm very concerned about what he's doing. And I think maybe we should get him out next week or maybe the next week after that. But then make sure we get Brent out after that. So you and me, Jordan, final two.
We'll figure out that we got the whole boot order figured out, even though it's week two. And actually, for the record, that dream, Taryn, I was listening to the American Ninja Warrior podcast, and I was listening to it and I fell asleep to it. And so I guess like you just like transferred into my dream. And then I had a dream that, you know, I knew I was thinking about this podcast all yesterday because I was super excited. But then I had a dream that Rob fired me and just made you the host because you were so good. And I was like, oh, no, what am I going to do? What am I without this podcast? So anyway, for the record, that's what it was.
Jordan,
also, go ahead, Taryn.
I had the same dream.
You had the same dream.
That is my dream.
So there you go. And also, for the record, going off topic a little bit, Taryn was on American Ninja Warrior last week, right, Taryn?
Not in the way you might think. Not that you would necessarily think that. But yeah, I went to the Philadelphia taping and I was a featured audience member for like a second. So yeah, if you really want to see me on TV, you can watch the Philadelphia qualifying round.
I've never seen Taryn more happy ever, so definitely check that out if you haven't already. And listen to the podcast. It's great. Go to robhaswebsite.com/rehapups. Okay, second on the list, he's not coming to us from his sister's house. He's back home today. He couldn't figure out his lighting, but he's finally settled on what he's got going on. It's Brent Wolgamott, ladies and gentlemen. Brent, how are you?
Nice to see everyone, Jordan. I also had a dream about Taryn last night, and it had nothing to do with American Ninja Warrior. I will just... I'll leave it right there. Moving on.
Okay. All right. There we go. So Taryn is in everyone's dreams, apparently. Alex, was Taryn in your dreams last night?
No. I just prepared a bunch of one-liners for this podcast that have completely – they're all gone now because now all I can think about is how disturbed I am by you guys in your dreams.
And also, we got Alex is rocking a fresh look for those of you who are watching us live on this Google Hangout here. Alex is going with no glasses today. Alex, you got the contacts going on.
Yeah, you know, I only took about a year to go ahead and reorder on the contacts. So that year, as it happens, ended up being like the year I've been introduced to the podcasting world. But yeah, you know, I figured, you know, how many Steves do I have to see watch this game before I decide to change up the look?
There you go.
Now you're ready.
Slide under the radar.
Now you're ready to play Big Brother.
Yeah.
All right, Alex, getting ready early. I'm liking it. Although last time that Alex tried to wear no glasses, the blab kicked him out. It was during our Price is Right recap for Big Brother, and Alex just had to quit after like 5 minutes.
First contacts.
Yes.
Hopefully they don't. Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't come. They don't strike again. Okay, so let's just set things up for you. So again, I mentioned we are live on a Google Hangout here. So we got the chat room going on robiswebsite.com. We're taking your questions live throughout this show. If this is your first time checking out the Reality TV for Happy Hour, welcome. Just a heads up for you. This is a live feed only show. So if you don't want any spoilers, if you don't want to know who won the veto, if you don't want to know what's going on after the veto, ceremony, any of that kind of stuff, then this probably isn't the show for you. But at the same time, like, just stick around. It's good. I mean, I there was a time where I was anti-spoiler back in the day, but once you come over to the spoiler side of things, you will never want to go back. Trust me, it's great. So stick around. It's fun. So today we're going to be getting into everything that's been going on in the BB18 house on terms of the feeds. We've got the three guys that have been watching it the most out there, so they can answer all of your questions. So this show is really, it's driven by you guys. It's the listeners. You guys are, you know, this is your chance to ask these guys the questions that you want to know. So get those in. We've already got quite a few in already, but we've got room for some more. So if you haven't already, you can leave a comment on the YouTube video or you can tweet me. I'm at Jordan Parhar. Use hashtag RaHappyHour and get in your questions that way. So guys, I had someone comment last week. They wanted us to kind of give like a little bit of a, like, you know, a brief, you know, kind of overview about the, you know, the main things that have been going on in the feeds for those people who, you know, might not necessarily be watching feeds all the time like you guys are and who don't really have a chance to keep up to date with all of the, you know, the Big Brother updates and Big Brother Daily and all these other things. So so I got the live feed correspondents to come up with one big story or one big topic of discussion from this week of the feeds that we're going to talk about to start off the show. It's not top five, baby. It's top three, baby. The top three stories of the week. And we will start with, let's start with Brent. Brent, you want to talk a little bit about Frank. Now, Frank is somebody who Taryn mentioned last night on Rob Has a Podcast in the live feed section, saying that, you know, everybody is starting to realize, hey, you know, Frank is actually, and not just us at home, the people in the house are realizing Frank is in a really good position in this game. So what do you think about Frank? Are his days numbered now?
Yes, I do believe they are numbered, and I don't believe that he will make it anywhere close to the end. Okay, so this is the deal. I really haven't had a chance to talk about this because I was, the last show that I was on with Johnny Mack. And we kind of scooted over Frank's game a little bit because we were mostly talking about the Messiah and his exit, all right, and the new Battle Back competition and everything. I don't really agree with everybody that says that Frank is playing a better game this year than he did during Big Brother 14. Okay, I want to make a confession. I don't listen to a lot of country music, all right, but there is one song that I like. It's by Toby Keith, and it's called I Ain't As Good As I Once Was, all right? This is the tack that Frank should be taking in this game, all right? Because his hair is all cut off now. He's a little bit older. He admits that he has a dad bod, as he says. He farts everywhere, all right? This should be the guy who says, you know what? I was really a beast back in 14, but I'm not as good as I once was. I mean, I've lost a step. I'm just a little bit older. But he cannot bring himself to do that, okay? Not only does he win the roadkill competition last week, but he loves to tell everybody in his alliance how quickly he did it and how much he was so close to winning again this week. Like, he was actually pissed about the fact that he didn't win the roadkill competition this week. I totally disagreed with anybody who said that he should have told his alliance last week that he won the competition. If you're somebody like Frank, you can't afford to tell anybody that you won squat, okay? He should have just kept his mouth shut, gone to the diary room, nominated Paul, and just, who cares if his alliance knows or not, you know? Once they see Bridget come up as the renom, it doesn't even matter anymore who won the competition, but it just puts more of a target on his back. When Frank says to us 2-3 weeks down the line, I don't know why everybody's targeting me. Why is everybody always coming after me? We're going to know that he's playing the exact same game that he was during Big Brother 14. He can't seem to get his own alpha maleness out of his head. Not only that, he starts fights with people for no reason. That fight he had with Tiffany during week one is just emblematic of his bad play. But then last night, for some reason, and I watched the scene a second time, and I still can't figure out if he's kidding. This whole Pizzagate thing that happened with James and Nicole, Frank was his most boorish, assholish self by yelling at them about how they undercooked the pizza. Now they pulled it out and they got to put it back in. And I still don't know what his problem was and why he was so upset, but he was literally yelling at people for no good reason. And it's just, I can't accept anybody who says that Frank is playing better this year, because anything he's doing to try to improve his gameplay is so transparent that other people see through it. And I can't exactly call that an improvement.
Okay, wow. So Pizzagate, I did not know about this. So Taryn, you want to explain what exactly was Pizzagate? So Nicole and James made a pizza, and basically what Brent just said happened, Frank just freaked out over it?
Well, yeah. I mean, Brent pretty much explained what it was. It's basically, Frank freaked out at James over, I think James had taken the pizza out, and I think Frank was saying it wasn't done yet, or something like that. And they played it off like they were joking back and forth, but Nicole got kind of upset, and it wasn't a huge thing, but it was kind of emblematic of Frank's status in the house, where he does kind of just feel like he can throw his weight around willy-nilly.
Yes, he does.
He makes a lot of jokes about, like, well, I'm going to target you next. Just kidding.
Yes.
Yeah, he feels very, very comfortable in the house.
Very comfortable.
He is doing the same thing he did in Big Brother 14. Tiffany is his new Dan, and he is just laser focused on Tiffany. Tiffany has to go out. She is my target. And she didn't have to be. He just told us on the feeds that Boogie told him going into the house, if Vanessa is there, align with Vanessa, because I am in with Vanessa. And so he was like, yeah. So I wanted to work with Tiffany, but she was just too emotional, so I couldn't do it. No, she wasn't too emotional. You picked fights with her, and yes, you got her angry at you, and you made this tension between the two of you when you didn't have to, and now you're dealing with that, and you're so focused on Tiffany that you're blind to all of the threats around you, including these girls, especially Day, who are talking about taking you out pre-jury, and you're just focused on Tiffany, and this is not a good position to be for Frank.
I also saw just before we hopped on that apparently there was also he had some talk with Bridget, and he was drunk or something. Alex, yeah, did you see that?
Well, yeah. I mean, today he's been drinking all day with Nicole and stuff. Like, there was sangria, and he's been, like, at the sangria all day. So, like, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it all just speaks to what Brent and Taryn were talking about. He feels very comfortable, and he shouldn't. You know, like, there's no reason why, even if you're in a position of power, you should be displaying this level of arrogance in the Big Brother house, because it's never going to, like, even if it's not going to come back on you immediately, it's going to leave people with a negative perception, and they're going to continue to talk about it, and it's going to, you know, just stoke the flame of whatever existed as a reason to try to target you in the first place. The thing with Bridget is, like, you know, it's already been kind of transparent to everyone that Frank is having these kinds of, like, game talks with Bridget on a level that, like, you know, like, his alliance is not thrilled with, you know what I mean? Like, it's too obvious. And then you couple it with, like, the fact that he was drinking today, and he's, like, just kind of making some bold statements that, yeah, I mean, and then they're watching it on the feeds in the HOH, and it just, it looks like what it is, you know what I mean? So it just, it all is kind of coming together, and it, you know, you don't think he'll be able to do this exact kind of behavior for too many more weeks before he's no longer someone they're talking about targeting in the future, and now someone they're targeting already.
So what exactly did he say to Bridget? He just said, like, okay, I'm targeting this person, and this person. This is, like, my plan of attack. Like, what exactly was it?
That. Yeah. I mean, he outlined, like, the next 4 weeks for Bridget. Like, this is who's going to go. Then it's like, we're going to take out Tiffany, or we're going to take out Bronte, and then we're going to take out Tiffany. And then we're, like, he's writing checks already that, like, he couldn't even begin to hope to cash. And not only that, but, like, it's giving her information that she doesn't need to have, or, like, there's no benefit to him saying this to her other than trying to pull her in a little bit in terms of trust. And the amount of, like, you know, damage it's doing to his game is, like, way above and beyond any benefit that might be had by bringing in Bridget.
Brent, with where things stand now, if Frank doesn't change his tune, when do you think he's going home?
I seriously think he could go home pre-jury. I do. And I do think there's a good chance he would come back and it would be Big Brother 14 all over again, when he was supposed to go home during the reset week and everybody said, oh, we were going to target you then. And then the whole rest of the way he's fighting against the entire house. I do think that history could repeat itself. And the sad part is, JP, it didn't have to happen this way. He didn't have to display this kind of arrogance. He could have easily slid into the, you know, old man dad role. Like, you know, I've lost a step. I've lost my edge. You know, he didn't obviously have to say it quite like that, but that could be his persona in the house. Instead, he's seen as the king of the house by literally everybody, and everybody wants to depose the king.
And the fact that he doesn't, he's so immediately dismissive anytime anyone mentions an all-girls alliance is really the big, to me, the worst piece of all of it. Because it's one thing to be throwing your weight around like that, but to have no idea of how it's impacting the people behind you, supposedly, like, that's what's really going to get you undone in the game.
And JP, he wants to take people, like, I heard him talking to Day, I think it was, about taking, like, you know, Zakiya and Nicole to the end with them. I'm like, in what universe is that a good idea for you if you're Frank? To take those people to the end? How in the hell are you ever going to make the final two with a bunch of girls? They're all going to come after you. And well, they should with his competition results. I just don't understand his thinking. Him trying to be in on the plan to get Victor out this week, while it may be good from an alliance perspective and trying to, you know, make his alliance happy, Victor would make a great meat shield for him. And if he was actually able to work with Victor, I think Victor would be very loyal to Frank. Victor is the kind of guy that Frank should be working with. Somebody who is bigger than him, who is stronger than him, and who is dumb as a box of rocks. I mean, from a big brother perspective. I'm not saying literally, I'm talking about from a game strategy perspective.
Yes.
Okay. He would love to work with somebody like this, and he's not even really considering it.
Yes, something that I'm noticing with Frank, too, is that I think he is trying to emulate Derek's game. I think that he has latched onto Polly, and he's considering Polly to be kind of his Cody. And he's taking he's taking Bridget on as his Victoria. He's priming her in the same way that Derek primed Victoria, only much sloppier, right? Like, he gets drunk and he tells her everything. Like, he spills his entire game plan to her. And this was the first time that he talked to her in like a week. She was like, you say that you're like, I'm your girl, but you haven't talked to me in a week. Like, what's going on, Frank? And he has. While not talking to Bridget, he has been telling everybody that Bridget is his girl. The thing about Derek and Victoria was Derek was like, oh yeah, Victoria, she's like so obsessed with me, but I'm so over it. Frank is like, yeah, Bridget's the best. She's my girl. Don't worry about Bridget. She's good. Like, people are like, okay, so she's your final two goat. Thanks for telling us. It's way too obvious. And even the way that he's handling Bridget is very sloppy, and it's going to come back to bite him.
And even on top of that, Bridget isn't quite as, you know, she's not as dumb as or as slow to this game as Victoria. Victoria didn't even care to socialize with people. You know, like, you could leave her in the bedroom and tell her, like, you know, like, she was just fine on a need-to-know basis. She didn't ask questions. She didn't – like, Bridget is actually inquisitive. Bridget actually wants to play this game. Bridget actually is, like, out there trying to socialize and make cookies for everybody. So, like, it's not – she's not going to be comfortable just accepting any role handed to her the way a Victoria would necessarily.
Does Bridget know about Frank winning the roadkill last week and putting her up, Brent?
No. She doesn't know about that, but I can't wait to find out until she does. Seriously. If you saw the reaction when she was nominated, she's not going to be very happy, especially when he's lying directly to her face. Like, you know, any doubt that you have that Bridget might vote Frank out, which I know some of the girls do have, that will be completely obliterated when they tell Bridget, oh, by the way, do you want to know who nominated you week one and who lied to you about that, about winning that competition? That was your old buddy Frank, still lying to you.
So who does know then about Frank winning the roadkill? Do we know that? I mean, I feel like it's all the vets know, right?
The vets APAC, plus really. Polly, isn't it? Polly. Isn't it just the vets plus Polly? I think that's it.
I do think the rest of the 8-pack knows as well.
Yeah, I think like Michelle and Zakiya.
I'm sorry. When I say the vets, I mean the 8-pack.
Yeah, 8-pack and Polly. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so interesting. So they could theoretically then take that information and go to some other people or go to Bridget and say, when they're ready to turn on Frank, and say, hey, just so you know, week one, you know who put you up? Actually, it was Frank. So, oh, wow. This is interesting stuff. I didn't realize Frank was doing all of this stuff here, but this is why we're doing this show, is we're trying to learn some stuff about what's actually going on. And I was really excited for Frank. I thought after that first week, he was looking really great, but that's a little disappointing. Let's jump to the second thing. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Taryn.
One more thing to say about Frank. It's my favorite thing about Frank right now is that one of the reasons that Tiffany wants to take Frank out pre-jury is that she doesn't want him on the jury because she knows how bitter he is from Big Brother 14, and it's damaging his game performance this time around. It's such sweet justice. I love it.
Oh my God, thank you so much for reminding me. The minute you opened your mouth, so I have one more thing to say. I'm like, oh, I know exactly what you're going to say because I forgot to write it down, but that was so in my head. I'm like, yes, you bitch, Frank, wouldn't vote for Dan at the end because he outplayed you and now history's going to repeat itself, except now you're going to be in the dance spot and no one's going to want you on the jury because of your behavior in the jury during Big Brother 14. And even if you make it to the end, I would love for him to be at the end with some newbie, which he's never going to make it to the end anyway. But even if he did, he's going to be at the end with some newbie and they're all going to be bitter at Frank and they're going to vote for the newbie and Frank's going to say, well, what happened? I was just playing the game.
Michelle beating Frank the way he did. That would be fitting.
I will say I do appreciate the effort, and he is one of the more entertaining people to watch on the feeds this season. So it is weird because I am a little bit rooting for him at the same time, just because he's one of the few people that's actually doing anything right.
Yeah, pickings are slim.
All right, let's jump to the second point of discussion, transitioning from Frank into the fracturing of the AIPAC. What's going on within the AIPAC right now? And what are they talking about? And that is what Taryn is going to talk about here. So, Taryn, let's talk about the groups within the AIPAC here. We've got the Fatal Five. Looks like Frank still, I mean, I guess he has Polly, but Polly's not really in the AIPAC. So what are the, as of right now, what are we looking at in terms of those groups?
Well, basically the Fatal Five has turned into the Fatal Four. Tiffany has been silently removed from the Fatal Five. She doesn't know it yet. Tiffany is basically on her own now. She had Michelle to some extent. She had Polly to some extent, but she has lost both of them. It's partly her behavior, partly people's expectations of her behavior because Vanessa is her sister. She's kind of lost those two connections. She's starting to form something with these spy girls, but that's not fully formed yet. So she is pretty much on her own at the moment. And with Frank targeting her and with her being on Dave's radar, she's in a lot of trouble. Then we have this Fatal Four. It's the Girls Alliance. This is the core power of the house right now, mostly because Frank is the only challenger to it, and Frank trusts them way too much. Frank does not realize that they want Frank gone soon. What Day said was, I want to stick with the eight, we're all good, but I also don't want to miss an opportunity if it presents itself. That's how she worded it. They're basically meaning, if we can get Tiffany to go after Frank, or if Frank is up on the block and goes home, like, we're okay with that. We want him gone pre-jury if possible. So that's where they are. Then Frank has been building his own thing, which is basically Frank, Corey, and Polly. And he obviously thinks that he has Bridget and is trying to reel her in as much as he can. So that's sort of his power base. But he also thinks he has Day, and that's his big blind spot because, like I said, Day is kind of onto Frank and wants to target him. And so that's basically how that eight pack is shaping up. Nicole, I think, is probably sitting the best of anyone. People talking about how much they like her. She's a chill girl, and she's one of the more reasonable people in the alliance. When people start talking about their paranoia, Day's doing this a lot. She's talking about, like, I'm paranoid about Tiffany being paranoid. I'm paranoid about Frank being paranoid. She's talking about all of her alliance members to a lot of people, opening her. I was just saying last night that Day was doing really well. She wasn't opening her mouth as much. And immediately after I said that night, she told a bunch of people a bunch of things, and it was not good. So, Nicole is sitting the best. She had a little thing with Corey where she realized that Corey is really on Team Frank. Corey is like, yeah, we want to go after Tiffany. Tiffany is a threat. And Nicole is like, Tiffany's not a threat to you. Like, what are you talking about? But Corey is definitely brainwashed by Frank at the moment. So a lot of interesting dynamics going on there. Hopefully we get to see some sort of fracturing at some point, but I suspect we might need to see the twist go away before we're able to see any super fireworks going off, which is intentional because it's the 4th of July.
Where's James in all of this, Alex?
James is kind of just doing his James stuff. You know what I mean? Like, he really isn't playing the game, the strategic game so much, you know? And that's really, I was going to touch on it some when we talked about some of the other people. But yeah, I mean, James is, he's got his head in the clouds. I mean, we saw a little bit of that edit on Sunday night. Like, James is more caught up with, like, playing pranks on people and flirting with the girls than he is playing the strategic game right now. I think he thinks that if he's likable and loyal and, you know, fun, that people will keep him around. And that's, like, as far as he needs to think it through. For now, that's probably true. In the mid game, he's going to run into the same problem he ran into last time, which is that that only gets you so far.
Yeah, pretty much all of these sides think that they have Frank on, or think that they have James on their side, because James is such a loyal guy. I don't think he even realizes that all of the people that he's loyal to are opposed to each other. Like, he's loyal to Frank, he's loyal to people like Nicole and Day, and he's loyal to Natalie to some extent. And those are all, like, those are three different sides, and I don't think he realizes that he's going to need to choose at some point.
Oh, man. You know, see, James, I was kind of agreeing with what Brent was saying about James on, I think it was on RHAP last week with Johnny Mack, in terms of just James being annoying. But, you know, I kind of, just the fact that James is so out to lunch, I just find that kind of endearing, and it's great.
Which quickly, is fantastic, Brent, because...
Oh, yeah.
Because people like Victor think that James is playing this mastermind game because he's unintentionally playing all sides. He's like, James has his hands in all the pots. He's masterminding everything.
It's awesome. Brent, let's talk about Tiffany here. You also wanted to talk about Tiffany as well, but you decided that Frank was a more pressing issue. Let's talk about what exactly happened with all of this here with Tiffany. I mean, she gets put up on the block. She kind of loses it. Then, you know, Frank wants to target her because they had that fight last week, and then now Davon is throwing her name out there. So just in general, what's happening with her at this moment right now?
Boy, I agree with Taryn. She really is on an island, it seems like. I don't know, like, who can she trust? I mean, maybe Michelle, I guess, to a certain extent, but I don't know if Michelle would necessarily go along with Tiffany's plans. The thing that might save both Frank and Tiffany is Davon, believe it or not, because I feel like that if Davon just, like, sat back and let these two go to war, she would better her position in the house, okay? Like, if you're Davon, let Tiffany go after Frank, let Frank go after Tiffany, fine. But Davon might somehow get herself in the middle of that, and I don't really like that position for her. I think it's better for her to just let Tiffany do her own thing. I don't know if Tiffany pulls the trigger on going after Frank if she doesn't know if she has the numbers to back it up, and right now those numbers look dicey, especially with the roadkill competition still in play. I know that she didn't say this to Tiffany, I don't think, but Michelle said it today, that she's not even on board on getting rid of Frank until after jury. She thinks it's too soon to do it right now. I guess they're afraid of some buyback competition, as well they should be. But as Taryn noted earlier, Tiffany wants to get Frank out before the jury, because I think she wisely thinks that he would never vote for her. And by the way, I forgot to mention this when I was talking about Frank, and I know you asked me about Tiffany, now I'm going on about Frank again. But...
It's all good, Brent.
Right.
It's all good.
Tiffany called him a chauvinist during their first fight together. I kind of agree with her. I do.
Time out. Let's just to backtrack. Okay. What exactly was this first fight? Because for people who don't remember, yeah, what happened there?
It was about, I can't remember exactly, Taryn, count me out, but it was about the AIPAC and how Frank was disseminating information to other people without the Alliance's firsthand knowledge or approval. Like, he was just taking it upon himself to tell people this is the way things are going to go. What was the issue that he was telling people again?
Yeah, this was kind of their second fight. They had a bit of a tiff earlier about, and I just keep saying tiff. A tiff earlier about he had just been messing with her and she overreacted, that kind of thing. But this was a much more serious thing, where Frank had gone to Natalie and told Natalie,
yes,
that Jose was going to go home. And he was trying to overplay his hand. He got a little too comfortable. He wanted to kind of be the mastermind, puppet master person. And Tiffany was upset about this. She was like, I don't appreciate that you did this. Frank was like, I don't care if you what you think. Tiffany was basically saying, like, you know, do you not care about what I have to say? And he was like, no, I don't. He just left. I think that's about how it went. And so Tiffany was very upset. Frank was annoyed. And Tiffany, when she was venting about it, crying downstairs with the girls, she mentioned that she was like, he's such a chauvinist, so on and so forth. And so that's what's being referred to.
I was going to say that the reason I think he's a chauvinist, at least in part, and I don't use that word lightly, but he does seem to have a sort of a guy's guy mentality where, you know, I even heard him talk about, like, the girl or woman that he's with is, that's my woman. That's my woman. Like, I'm like, who says that except somebody who acts
wrestlers
like that?
Wrestlers say that. He's right? The son of a professional wrestler.
Well, then great. But
that's the lifestyle he comes from. I just accept that his worldview, he was born into a different culture. You know what I mean? Like, that.
That's true.
I'm not defending it, but, like, that's who he is. He is Psycho Sid Udy's son. Like, I appreciate that as a wrestler, as a fan of wrestling. Like, I know a lot of people don't know what that means. To me, it means a lot. And that dude was like, I mean, he was a villain for his entire career. He was the bad dude, Psycho Sid. Like, he was the wrestler that was, like, nefarious and always, like, pulling nasty moves. Like, you only get that character if you're kind of a dick in real life. You know what I mean? Like, the best wrestlers play characters that are a version of themselves. Like, he's a cocky, arrogant dude who wins competitions. Like, he's never been not reinforced with this stuff in his life, I'm sure. You know what I mean? So I'm not defending his approach, but, like, I understand why it is his approach. You know what I mean?
I love that we have you here as a wrestling fan, because I don't watch wrestling. I know sure as hell JP and Taryn don't, right? But I'm so glad that you know this stuff.
Who'd have guessed this stuff would ever come into play right? In any kind of meaningful way, right?
And it should be said also that Tiffany later apologized to the Feedsters, like, saying, I shouldn't have called him a chauvinist, so on and so
forth. Yes, she should have.
Well, I want to go back to, you know, the thing Brent talked about, which is this idea that, like, Frank and Tiffany are totally primed to go at each other. And it really is Day who's done a lot of the work in, like, convincing Frank that Tiffany can't be trusted, convincing Tiffany Frank can't be trusted. Like, she's put in time really, like, kind of laying all the explosives under the bridge, right? So she can bury both of them. My thing is, like, what Brent alluded to is, like, she's got the explosives already primed and she's still tinkering. You know what I mean? Like, she's still like, I just want to, I don't know. Should it be a 15 minute, you know, detonation or 20 minute? Like, she's still messing around. And eventually she might, like, accidentally be like, oh, 1 second. I didn't mean that. Boom. Right in her face. So that's the danger here with Dave Vaughn, right?
Yeah, that's perfect. Like, she just got Tiffany to tell her, yeah, I want Frank out pre-jury. Frank has been telling her, I want Tiffany out next week. This is all she needs. It's already set up. But she's still going to Frank and saying, hey, guess what? Tiffany told me she wants you out pre-jury. Hey, Tiffany, guess what? Frank is a big threat. He's probably going to be targeting you. Like, it's already in place. You don't need to interfere anymore. You don't need to keep talking about Tiffany. You don't need to keep talking about Frank. Let them go at each other. It's going to happen now. You just need to back up.
Last thing on this point here, guys, we had a question come in from Eric Chason on Twitter at Chase999. And he said, will Frank and Tiff ever talk and realize that Dave Vaughn is, in fact, the one that is actually putting them against each other? Yeah, on that subject, do you think there's any chance that they'll compare notes on this, Taryn?
It's funny that this is the question, because immediately after Tiffany said, yeah, I want Frank out pre-jury, she had a conversation with Frank up in the HOH room, and Dave Vaughn was like, oh my God, they're probably, like, settling their differences and making an alliance, because that is what they should be doing. Like there's a reason Boogie told Frank to work with this girl, or at least to work with Vanessa, because Frank needs to work with the Dan. He needs to not be so fixated on this person. He will need to take her out eventually, but he can't focus on that right now. He needs to focus on his image, and his image right now is getting more and more laser focused on, like, Frank is this kingpin and he's taking out a hit on Tiffany, everyone. Look how much power he wields. And so what he needs to do is make peace with her and then take a step back, like Day needs to take a step back. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen. I think that both Tiffany and Frank have their egos a little too in the way to get together and actually formulate something.
All right, let's jump over to the third topic of discussion for this evening. And that is, what the hell is everybody else doing here, Alex? Let's talk about the Spy Girls, Victor, Paul, I want to know, what is the revolution up to these days? Does Victor know that he's going home? Currently, the status is, for those of you who did not watch RHAP last night or haven't been keeping up with the feeds, Paulie won the veto. I don't know if he has used it yet, but the plan was he has used it. So today. He used it today on Paul. Okay. And now Victor is up in his place. So what was the reaction to that, Alex, from Victor? Was he blindsided? Does he think he's safe? What's going on?
Well, if you ask Victor, he totally knew it was coming. If you ask most people who are watching the feeds, despite the edit that we got last night, like, he may know what a backdoor is, but I think he was a bit naive up until the moment it actually happened in thinking that they weren't actually going to carry this out on him. Like, it's Paulie's HOH at the end of the day, and he really has done everything he can to try to, like, you know, fall at Paulie's feet and just offer anything he can offer. The problem is Paulie's already got everything he needs, so what are you going to offer him that he doesn't already have? Victor is pretty much dead in the water, and I don't think he necessarily was willing to accept that fact until today, but now the reality's setting in. And, you know, yeah, he talked about to Paul a little bit about, you know, like, what could I have really done? And there's not a ton, you know what I mean? Like, that is kind of the thing here. It's like these guys, these newbies really are, like, just trying to figure out. They're, like, trying to read the book, and they're always going to be several chapters behind. So they're always going to be reacting instead of, like, making the action. So, you've got, like, them all reacting to Jose going out and them knowing they're in trouble kind of in different ways this weekend. Obviously, like, Bronte is trying to, you know, distance herself from the guys, especially from the Paul and Victor contingent. She blames them for kind of steering them the wrong way. As we talked about with Bridget, you've got her kind of just trying to play nice with everybody and trying to, you know, again, talk with Frank, these kinds of things. Really, to me, the most interesting is this Natalie-James dynamic. It's a bit off-putting for me. Like, just, I don't know, just the idea of Natalie being in a position of helplessness and James representing someone who's in a position of power, and the fact that that's, like, all of a sudden she's attracted to him. Like, it's weird to me, man. I can't get over it. Like, to me, it's like Stockholm Syndrome.
To be fair, she did talk about, like, she did say that James was the kind of guy that she would date when she thought she had a majority last week. So it wasn't just when he came into power.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. But I don't know. I wouldn't accuse her of, like, thinking of doing that. I just think it's funny how, like, you know, just your mind, like, how it operates, how people who don't understand the game, you know, they're scared now. They're running for cover. They're rats bailing from a sinking ship. I mean, that's what this is. The jig is up. It's all coming. It's all falling apart. And to see how, like, they're reacting when they're scared, you know what I mean, I think is what's interesting. And, like, I don't think Natalie's, like, being manipulative, but this idea that, like, I'm scared, I'm alone, James is in, you know, he's like a branch to grab before you hit the ground, you know what I mean?
I will say, though, that it was a little bit of a misdirect by the show, and I had a problem with it, because on Sunday night's show, when they showed Natalie reacting to, oh, Jose went home, and now, you know, I voted for Jose to stay, I voted against Paulie, you know, she was acting like she was shocked. If you've been watching the feeds, you know this bitch wasn't shocked, all right? Frank had taken her aside and said, okay, just so you know, this is what's going to happen. I mean, it was like the night before we were all talking about how he was ruining the blind side because he told Natalie what was going on. This is the whole thing about why he got into a fight with Tiffany, because he was disseminating information that he didn't have a right to do. So it's like, I didn't really like her pretending like she was shocked. I know they couldn't work that into the edit, but then why is she acting this way to James when she already has Frank, who is being nice to her and saying, you know, just so you know, you can still vote Paulie out and no one's going to be coming after you. You know, go ahead. I know you gave Jose your word. It's okay. I get it. But even if you do that, you know, you're still, no one's coming after you. You're still low on the totem pole. Don't worry. So why the hell is she going to James for anything? They were talking about going on the Amazing Race together. I mean, you know, you can say what you want.
What?
I know Rob has an issue. She wants to be on the Amazing Race with James. Yes, she does. I know Rob has an issue with James, you know, going after these pretty girls. But in James's defense, Natalie's kind of giving him all the right signals and saying, you know, hey, I'd like to, you know, maybe be with you or something. You know, she's not explicitly telling him no. And in fact, the signals seem to point to yes. So I don't really blame James for thinking that there's something possible here.
No, and I don't blame him either. I think the dynamic is, like,
it's off-putting. Weird.
It's worth pointing out, because yeah, you're right. It's strange. The Big Brother house creates these situations that to me are very, you know, like, worth talking about and worth discussing.
I don't know. I think she's genuinely into him. And, you know, she talked preseason about how she's not into six packs. She likes the beer gut a little bit. And
then she showmanced with Victor for a week.
And, and that is the big hiccup, right? But
girls
she, again,
say that.
Like,
I mean, I've never dated a girl in my life, but girls say that, and then they go with the guy with the six pack. Come on.
Yeah, introduce me to the girl that, like, looks at me and looks at Victor and is like, that guy's got something going on with his physical. his parents, yeah.
So Taryn, you think then there's showman's potential here?
I don't know how far it'll go. I don't think she's the kind of person that would want to go very far on camera in the first place. But I do think that she genuinely has a little bit of a crush here. She's talked about it with some of the other girls, like not in front of James. Like I think that it is something that's actually there. And I think that James, you know, James is going to take what he can get. And Natalie is a pretty big get. So I think that relationship will continue to develop if they if she stays in the house. But this relationship has put her a little bit higher on the target list because people are a little bit concerned about her relationship with James. So you'd think that this is going to help her get in with a bigger group, but it's actually doing the opposite.
Have the newbies started to, you said it was kind of like rats jumping off of a ship, Alex. Have they started to, turn on each other now? Have they started to throw each other's names under the bus, or are they not yet at that stage? Are they still kind of trying to stay tight as best they can?
Mm-hmm. No, they're totally ready to throw each other under the bus if it comes to it. I mean, they're, like I said, we realize they don't know the game. But one thing that kind of has slapped them in the face and can't be ignored at this point with the Jose blind side is that they don't have the numbers. They're in trouble and they're at the mercy of a larger majority group. They've kind of, you know, pieced it together, you know, at least with kind of just basic common sense and kind of, you know, just thinking it through that, like, these next couple of weeks are going to be bad for the group that voted against Pauly. It's possible, and, you know, certainly they realize that one or two of them might eke through and make the jury phase and then have new life in the game, but it's not going to be all of them. There's no way all of them are making it. So, yeah, I mean, right, it's the piece of wood after the Titanic, and we can't all fit. Someone's going to have to just freeze to death. And, yeah, who's going to be Jack? Nobody wants to be. So, yeah, I mean, like, Bridget, you know, you had Bridget kind of a little bit, like, talking about – certainly Bronte has really been throwing the guys under the bus. She's done with them. A little bit Bridget distancing herself from the Spy Girls, and a little bit Natalie spending more time with James. Like, even if people haven't outright thrown each other under the bus, which in a couple of cases they kind of have, they're certainly, like, hedging their bets in ways where before they were putting all their eggs in the same basket and just thinking that basket was good.
You know who's really impressed me, and someone that we have not talked about through this entire podcast, is Paul. I am so impressed with Paul and how he's been able to realize, hey, I'm on a sinking ship. I need to get the hell off. And, you know, playing Victor this week as he did, he didn't do it great because Pauly was on to him a little bit after, I think it was Bridget told Pauly that, you know, hey, he's trying to save Victor. And he's like, no, I just had a talk with Paul. And Paul knows if he tries to do anything to save Victor, that he's going to go home. And he was able to establish some trust. I think Pauly, now that he's used the veto on Paul, there are some seeds planted there. And Paul, even though he doesn't really know the game, you know, I loved watching him on the TV show on Sunday night when he said, you know, Pauly, you're asking me to do this. You're asking me to do this. And I'm going to do that because I don't really have a choice right now. And he didn't fight it. He did exactly what the HOH wanted him to do. And he's successfully somewhat managed to fade back into the background. And when you have as big of a personality as Paul does, that's kind of hard to do. So kudos to him.
If you guys, let's quickly go around the horn here because I'm curious about this. Taryn, if you had to pick one of these newbies that's on the outs right now to win this game in terms of having the best odds, who would you pick?
To win, I would say it would be either Paul or Natalie, and I'd probably go with Paul.
Alex?
Yeah, I would have to take Paul simply from what he's demonstrated in the way of not just adapting, but he's trying the hardest, I think. And the effort to me is important if you're going to be able to win the game. Like, you have to be someone who's willing to scramble to create a new alliance. And he's doing that.
Brent, what about you? You co-signed that?
Yep, 3 for 3, Paul.
3 for 3, Paul.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm really liking Paul, too. I had a question here. Who was this one from? It was from Jimmy O'Connor, at Jimmy W. O'Connor on Twitter. He said, do you guys like Paul? I feel alone on this opinion. Another fan would be a Christmas Corey miracle. I feel like people do like Paul, right? Like, what's the general internet reaction been to Paul, Alex, just based on what you've seen?
Well, my perspective is a lot of casual viewers and show-only watchers think he's a total douche. But like, if you've been watching the live feeds, you get, obviously no one is so one-dimensional when you're watching a lot of feeds. Like, you get everyone's sides, you get everyone's ups and downs, you recognize that no one is perfect, and that, like, you know, for me personally, live feeds made it harder for me to have a rooting interest in Big Brother, because like, I just started seeing everyone as just kind of like people with perspectives, and no one's good or bad, just kind of like Game of Thrones, you know what I mean? But sorry, that was ridiculous.
There's no prince that was promised on this season. Alex?
Oh no,
you're telling
no, no,
me that?
No, no, yeah, Frank is. Yeah, no, Frank. We may have seen Frank in the fire, but we were wrong. I don't know. It's really interesting stuff. I lost my train of thought.
Okay, that's okay. What I liked about Paul is, you know, you asked if these new players are throwing each other under the bus. And what Paul did was basically he took Victor and he said, hey, come here. And he stood him right in front of him and he said, sorry, buddy. And then he kind of backed away. Like, he didn't shove him under the bus. It wasn't really obvious. It was just very light. You know, I love the guy, but I have to do what I have to do. And he even said that to Paulie, like, you know, I love Victor, but, you know, I'm in this position and I'm going to be loyal to you. And it's very much the kind of Dan Gieseling patented strategy of, here's my alliance. Here's my alliance member that's going to go home, and I'm going to show them loyalty on their way out as I'm positioning myself away from them. And it's very effective if done correctly, and Paul is doing it pretty well.
And he won a lot of points for me immediately following the blind side too, which is like, you know, how you react to things not going your way in the Big Brother house says a lot about your potential as a player, I think. You know, Victor's immediate reaction, anger. He's kind of lashing out before he's able to calm down. The girls are, you know, fear, mistrust, like paranoia. Paul's first move is like contriteness, trying to show kind of like some degree of, you know, it's basically like he just kind of like lay down in front of the, you know, like, more powerful animal, and like just accepted that he's in a submissive position, and that's really the only play you have at that point. So the fact that Paul was able to see that so quickly, I think, spoke well to his potential in the game.
Before we move on to the questions, quickly, I just want to talk about the last person that we haven't really talked about too much that is not a part of the APAC, although I guess kind of he is, and that's Paulie. Brent, now that his HOH is pretty much over, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank Paulie's reign?
I would rank it as a 10. Because he did everything. I would. He did everything that the Alliance wants him to do. He was able to establish new bonds with other people that he previously hadn't been working with, in Paul and some of the girls to a lesser extent. And he's able to get off the block, get out of the HOH room with a target that the entire house basically agrees on. I mean, if they don't go after Tiffany, here's the thing. If they don't have the votes to get rid of Tiffany, it's going to be 10-0 to get rid of Victor. And, you know, Paulie is completely blameless. So I think he's done a great job.
Good for Paulie. Yeah. You know, I have this weird like epiphany. I don't know if you guys agree on this or not. And this is probably completely off base, but just watching Paulie on the show, and partially, I think it's because of Rob's impression of him when he's talking about the Calafiore doing that thing. Paulie kind of reminds me of Zac Efron in like all of those movies where he's a meathead, where he is like a guy who, For me personally, I don't really usually like those kinds of guys, but for whatever reason, Paulie is just so endearing, and I actually kind of really like him. I don't know what it is. It's just been fun to watch, and I'm happy for Paulie. Do you think, Taryn, that Paulie could surpass Cody? Because I know that you really like Cody as a player. Not everybody else likes Cody, but based on this week, I think he's got that upside, right?
Well, I mean, let's dispel this myth a little bit. I don't necessarily really like Cody as a player. I think he's underestimated as a player. He's underrated as a player, but I don't think he's like a great player. And I don't think Pauly is a great player either, but I do think Pauly is a very solid player. And being a very solid player in this house with this twist is going to be a very, very good thing. I think that this HOH in particular has put him in a great spot. Nobody's talking about targeting him, but he's nobody's, he's not so off the radar that people are going to have this epiphany about him either. They know where he stands and they're comfortable with it. And that's the best place to be in the house. So I think he's going to get very far. And I think that he's going to have a decent chance of taking it home.
Yeah, I agree. Basically, he's like the real life version of Danny Zuko.
There we go. All right. Think that one's a little better. I like that one. That one's good. Real life Danny Zuko, potential hashtag candidate there. Okay, let's jump into your questions, guys. You got a lot of them to get through here. If you haven't got one in already, you can leave a comment on the YouTube video or you can tweet us using hashtag RehappyHour. I'm at Jordan Parhar. It's the best way to get through on Twitter. Okay, this one comes from at EvilRoyCA on Twitter. And EvilRoyCA says, did Frank really say he was taught chess by Bobby Fischer? Nobody flinched? Does he lie about other stuff? Okay, Alex, did this happen?
You know, I missed it. I did see the tweet, but I didn't actually hear him say that. I do know that he was drinking all day today. So, like, if he said this, I'm not shocked. I guess I don't know that it's a lie. Like I said, his dad's was, famous in the 90s, and so was Bobby Fischer. It's possible that he got, like, a lesson, that their two celebrity dads, two celebrities met, but it seems very unlikely, right? Yeah, that's giving him a lot of benefit of the doubt. Bobby Fischer probably isn't, giving out lessons to wrestlers' kids willy-nilly.
Right, and didn't Bobby Fischer kind of just go off the grid, like, at some point? So that, that's highly questionable. Taryn, Brent, did you hear this?
No idea. I've never heard of him. Well, I know who Bobby Fischer is, but no, I've never heard of
him. You didn't hear Frank talk about this? Taryn, you didn't either?
No.
Maybe he watched the movie?
Yeah.
But yeah, it really was. I mean, today was Frank's day of really, everything that Brent says, he's doing wrong. He's really showcasing it today. The alcohol doesn't help, I'm sure. But, talking about, I'm a man. Everyone else in this house is a boy. Like, he actually said that today. Like, that's that same line of logic. You know what I mean? It's Frank talking up Frank. It probably makes him feel good in the moment. It's probably reinforcing him. It's probably what helps him do so well in competitions. But if you could keep that self-talk self and not let other people hear it, then you're much better off, because other people interpret it as just straight out arrogance. And even if that's not what he's going for, that's what's being received.
This next one comes from Ari on Twitter, at Ari_W17. He says, we haven't seen much of Michelle on the show, but how do you think she's playing based on the live feeds? Taryn, I'll throw that one to you.
Michelle is doing pretty well. I think that she is another person. She's in a similar spot to Nicole, but she's less connected. A lot of people have talked about, thinking that she's somewhat likable. They're trusting her to an extent. She's not at the top of anybody's, totem pole, but she's also not on the bottom. She's just kind of hanging out in the Fatal Four now. And she also has some decent connections to people like Pauly. The biggest problem that she has is that she has this kind of, she has this thing with Bridget, because all stemming back from this shaving the eyebrows comment, they just can't get along for whatever reason. It's just really dumb. But I don't see her going anywhere anytime soon. People have talked about wanting to bring her very far into the game, and that's where you want to be as a super fan. If you have the mind to take home those mental comps down the road, then this is exactly the, the Steve Ian kind of route where, get taken that far, that go on a comp run, and then, hey, then you're the winner.
Right.
I don't know why Michelle, as a super fan, doesn't go directly to Bridget and say, take her in one of the rooms. Let's have a talk. Let's just talk. I feel like there's a little bit of bad blood, and I heard you said something, and maybe you heard I said something, and I feel like there's been a little bit of a misunderstanding, and let's clear the air. Because what you don't want is for you to be at the top of someone's list. And right now, she's at the top of Bridget's list. and that cannot be underestimated. I mean, Michelle might be in a great position right now, but the wrong person gets HOH the wrong week without this roadkill twist, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks from now, and she's toast. I mean, so she really should do something to rectify that. I always said if I was in the Big Brother house and I knew someone didn't like me, I'd go kill him with kindness. Go and take in a room, say, you know, hey, I'm sorry, it was my bad. You know, I made a bad call there. You know, try something to show them that you are worthy of working with them. The fact that she's not doing it right now is just ignoring the problem, both of them, but especially to Michelle since she's a super fan. It really speaks not so great of her game.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it really highlights why it was so important that Michelle found herself in the majority alliance early. You know, super fans, and we've noted this in the past, like Ian was in trouble week one. A lot of times the personality type that's conducive to watching live feeds all summer, crazy, right, isn't very social. It's insane. But yeah, so like, it's not a natural instinct, I don't think, for her to think about going to do something like that. Like, that is someone like that. That takes a level of empathy. I feel the negative vibes coming off of Bridget and I need to go squash that. You know what I mean? Like, she maybe just doesn't pick up on that, or she picks up on that and thinks she's in a position where it's not going to matter. Either way, it speaks to like, I don't want to do that. That'd be awkward. I'd rather avoid that, which is like not great. Social strategy, you know, so like we've seen that before with great, you know, mental and, you know, strategic minds that they're not always necessarily the most gifted when it comes to like the right thing to do socially. But yeah, she's in a great position solely because she's found herself in the majority within the majority. And yeah, the only person who's mentioning, as Taryn talked about, the things that you have to worry about with the super fan, the late game stuff, and the fact that she's really the only super fan in this house, which usually there's a little more in terms of knowledge. Frank is the only person that's even really mentioned that. And Frank's bubble is almost surely going to burst before hers. So that's good that other people aren't worried about the super fan the way they should be.
And there is a small kind of unintentional benefit to having this kind of feud with somebody like Bridget, who's so inconsequential, that it's this situation kind of with Polly where they see exactly where her head's at. Anytime she talks about getting rid of someone, it's usually like, hey, we should get rid of Bridget. And not just for personal reasons. I also have strategic reasons. And it's like, okay. All right, Michelle, let's pat you on the head. You know, little Michelle, she's just upset with Bridget. That's all she's thinking about. And nobody's worried about her beyond that because they think that she's just preoccupied with that. Unfortunately, she is just preoccupied with that, but it does help her image in the house.
Yeah, it reminds me of Steve when he was just like all of a sudden made Becky his mortal enemy. We were like, all right, go for it, Steve. I don't know where this is coming from, but yeah, okay. You need somebody, I guess, to, you know...
I've talked to Steve a few times about that, and he doesn't know where that came from. Like, in terms of the edit on the show, he's like, I hate Becky. Like, I don't hate Becky. Like, where did this come from? So very, very interesting. Where, I don't know how that started either, but and maybe Steve apparently doesn't know either. So good stuff.
It was during the diary room.
There was one DR all of a sudden. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But that he said he wanted her to lose, but he's like, just because I wanted her to lose at a competition does not mean I hate her. But then
but he took such pleasure in it, like whatever. I can't remember what the competition was, but like she failed and he was like so happy that she failed. It was like he was like giddy with himself. Like, I mean, that's where that whole thing came from.
It's so funny. I was like, when Jason, he voted out Jason too, he was like, hi Julie, I'm sorry, but I get to step in. Jason, I vote to evict you. It was like, whoa, that was like super.
It's like he
happy.
Was more excited to be involved in the Big Brother process than in the way he was involved. You know what I mean?
I think what happened was that they kind of neutered a lot of his diary room sessions. So when they revealed, you know, his actual self, like in the diary room, being a little more, you know, extroverted and like, I'm playing the game, it was like, whoa. Oh, this is a shock.
Who's this guy?
Right. Yeah. This is why I rooted for Steve last year, because every time you come in the diary room on voting night, you guys all know what he would do exactly. He would go like, hi, Julie. Like, it was just always like, you know, total unabound happiness at being to play in the house to play Big Brother. So it was great to see. Steve, I miss you. Come back.
We love us some Steve Moses. Okay, let's jump to this one. Brent, I'll throw it to you. This comes from at Colin Brown on Twitter, although he spells it B-R-W-N-E. I'm assuming it's Brown. He says, how is Nicole and Corey's little showmance going? And are there any showmances in the house? So let's just focus on the Corey and Nicole thing. What's going on with that right now, Brent? And we heard Taryn mention earlier that Nicole is onto the fact that Corey seems to be more loyal strategically to Frank. But are there still some sparks flying there?
She was saying earlier that, or there was somebody, I think it was Frank earlier, trying to push the whole Nicole Corey thing. But then someone after the fact told her that, you know, that's why he's trying to put it. Was it Frank that was saying that? Or maybe I'm getting mixed up. But I know that somebody was pushing the whole Nicole Corey alliance showmance thing because they thought it would be good for them strategically. I swear to God it was Frank, but I can't remember who was talking about that. She does have some attraction to him, but it's like we've talked about this. She keeps saying that she's not going to do it, but there's not a lot to do in the Big Brother house, and there's a guy who thinks she's pretty swell and he's pretty good looking, so why not? You know, I don't really know. I don't really know what's going on with them, actually.
He's too cute. He's too cute for Nicole. That's what she says.
Yeah, she did say that. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, and Corey has also said when Corey was talking with, I believe it was like Paulie and perhaps Paul and Frank, they were talking about how girls are gullible and they just believe anything you tell them. And Corey was like, oh, yeah, like I told Nicole, I was talking about, you know, like the number, like how many sexual partners you've had. And she guessed mine. And she was like, what, like 20? And I was like, oh, I don't know. She was like, oh, maybe like 4 or 5. He's like, yeah, yeah, around there. She believed it. like so ridiculous. Like
in the battle of wits, Corey is armed with a spoon.
Yeah, I mean, Corey, what are you doing, man? That's I don't know if it came up on BB17, but in Canada, at least the most recent seasons, that always seems to come up, that number
Jordan,
thing.
Go ahead, Brent. I'm sorry. Well, you know, this Joshua Miller from Twitter asked, has been a slow season thus far. What can they do to turn it around? I have a suggestion what they can do to turn it around. They can stop doing these damn team HOH competitions and has actually let people compete. You know what's really sad is that Victor never had a chance to win HOH this week because it's a team concept. Look, I get the fact that they're going to keep the teams. That's fine. Keep the teams if you want to, okay? I don't love them, but you can keep them. But let them compete individually for HOH. This whole, like, I heard Frank and Bridget talking about, well, who are we going to let be HOH? Like, we're all going to come together and decide who's going to be HOH, whose turn it is to be HOH this week, based on things like it's your birthday or it's this or it's that. Like, shut up. That is not how Big Brother's supposed to be run. You're not supposed to be deciding ahead of time, okay, you're going to get HOH this week because we're all going to come together and allow you to do that. And the other people having to throw HOH because of certain people on their team that they want to get rid of. It's a terrible, terrible way to play the game. And considering that Victor didn't get chosen for the veto and to play in the veto and couldn't ever in his wildest dreams win this HOH competition because somebody on his team was actively throwing the competition, just speaks to where this game is right now.
Yeah, they need to drop the twists. That's what, like, if this week had been a normal week, no roadkill, no team competition, and Victor had won the HOH, which it seems like he might have been capable of doing if he was competing on his own, then we would probably see this entire big alliance fractured this week. And we would have seen a ton of action this week, and we would have seen a ton more action going forward in the game. But instead, we had the team thing, so someone was able to, you know, manipulate the system in order to get HOH and keep the majority in power. And then even though he won the roadkill, which, you know, it turns out to be completely pointless because again, the majority has the votes anyway, so it doesn't matter at all. They need to drop the twist if we want to see some action happen.
Yeah, well, it speaks back to, it's the same analogy I used with Dave Vaughn. Like, production just can't help themselves but tinker, you know what I mean? And just try to, you know, fine-tune minutia and stuff, and what the best thing you could have done was nothing, you know what I mean? Like, we all, you know, we recently talked about the greatest blindsides in Big Brother history, and, you know, we talked about all the time, like, the best moments this show has ever put out. I can't think of one that came as a result of a twist. Every single one is an organic reaction as a result of decisions others make in the house in the moment. Organic. What's not organic about this season? Everything. Everything is inorganic. The division that exists in the house was created beforehand. I mean, it's just, I could write a dissertation.
I will say before people tweet at us, the one exception is I believe Dustin.
Okay.
Yeah, well, right. that's fair. They forced that issue. That's true.
And obviously
Dan had to actualize it. If they
Dan
don't
was
have
America's
Eric
player
there.
When he voted out Jesse. But I'm with you. Like, but they all seemed organic. I get where you're coming from. Like I said, I'm okay with the team thing. I know that you guys don't like it. I'm okay with it. But let them compete individually for it. Like, if I see, like, another team's competition on this Thursday night's episode, I'm going to scream. There should literally be 13 stands with A and B on them. That's what there should be. Okay, actually, it would be 12 because Polly can't compete. So 12 stands. And let them all compete to see who becomes the head of household. And then we can go about our business. And the people on whoever wins, the people on your team are safe. I get that. That's what CBS wants to do. And Allison Grodner wants to do. I get it. They want to have the roadkill competition. I get it. But let people have a chance to compete for HOH and inject a bit of drama into this show, for God's sake.
It is funny to me, though, how every season it seems like the thought process was we want competitions to matter. And every season, the twist they end up arriving at, like, waters down the actual value of competition. Like, it's just crazy to me that someone is getting paid to do the opposite of what they say they're trying to do. But
yeah, it's weird. You would think that, you know, Big Brother is a show that airs like 3 months of the year. You'd think they would figure out after all of these years, 18 seasons, they would figure out the correct formula to use. But I mean, I think they figured it out. They just
long
don't.
Time
they just
ago.
Don't. Yeah,
they don't
a
like
long
it.
Time ago. But they're just like, you know, it's
here's
it's,
the
if
thing.
It ain't broke, don't fix it. But yeah, it's just
I don't
frustrating.
I don't understand. You know, they said for the longest time, people complained. You know, Rob, other people, wasn't Rob. It's not Rob's fault that we don't have the food competition anymore. I'm just saying that. But a lot of people complain about the food competition. We don't like the food competition. I would give my right arm for a food competition right now if it would get rid of these stupid twists. Seriously,
especially those ones where they had to drink blended stuff.
Oh yeah, that was great.
Fine.
Good time. I just watched Big Brother 10 the other day. I was going through watching Big Brother 10, and they had the sock competition where they're yelling over the wall at each other trying to get food for the week. Like, that was fun popcorn television, which we do not currently have on our TV screens right now.
You remember in BB4, it was like, let's all pick one article of clothing from everyone else that we can't stand that we wear every day to burn? Can you imagine, like, somebody burning Vanessa's hat from Tiffany?
That would be so great.
For me, it's just like, this is like a nerdy comparison, but there's this kind of interview with this gaming thing that happened with video games where the developers talked about a lot, like, every single quest needs to be go out and kill something. We want action in every single quest. And I feel like the Big Brother producers have the same sort of mentality where they feel like we need competitions. People love competition. We need action happening in the house. But I disagree. I don't think we need a competition every single episode. I don't think that they're the most engaging part of the show. I think that two is more than enough, and maybe three if there's a food competition, sure. Maybe like a luxury competition, those can be fun, but we don't need them. We don't need them, and we don't need them to be so high stakes, in quotes.
I agree with you.
Yeah,
I just need, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted you. What I'm saying is I agree with you. What I'm saying is I understand that they think that they have to have one competition every episode. And if that's what they think, I would be more than happy to take a food competition over the crap that's currently on my TV screen. Sorry. Yeah.
One other thing that I wanted to bring up, and I don't know if this was talked about last night on RHAP, Taryn, because I was listening to the podcast this morning while I was at work doing deliveries in my pickup truck that I was driving. I know, right? What about you probably wouldn't anticipate that's what I do for work in the summer, but that wasn't what I was picturing.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Anyway, what I was going to say is the lack of the who wants to see my HOH room. We didn't get that last week with Nicole. We didn't get that last week with Polly. So is that dead, guys? Are we not getting that anymore?
I think that with the roadkill in play, the fact that they are dividing the episode in half with nominations at the 30-minute mark and then roadkill at the end, we're probably not going to see it this season. And then if they like that, we might not see it ever again, similar to what they did with the nomination wheel. Personally, I'm okay with that. I've never been a huge fan of it. I know Brent likes it. I was surprised that they didn't want to include at least the letter from Cody, but I'm okay with it, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think it's great, right, Alex? It's good.
Well, yeah, I like that part of it, but yeah, I agree with Taryn. It's just, you know, so many competitions that you just have to start, you know, leaving a lot more on the cutting room floor. I think, you know, if we're going to leave stuff out, that's certainly something I'm much more fine leaving out than like the Tiffany overreaction, which also didn't make the show, or like the, any of the Frank Tiffany squabbles, which haven't made the show, or like, you know, there are things that are going to probably pay dividends strategically in a few weeks that we haven't laid any groundwork for on the show. So to me, that's much more frustrating.
Well, I'll gladly be in the minority here and say I love the Who Wants to See My HOH room, because you get to see who are the players and who are not. Who are the people who can sit up there and gnash their teeth and smile fakely to other people when they know they really don't want to. I love seeing those moments on the show. I think that's what makes the show great. People love the show because of the kitschiness of it. And that's one of the elements of Big Brother that's so kitschy. You know, a lot of people like us like the strategy, but I particularly like the kitschiness of it. Like, it's just so ridiculous. It's funny, you know, to have this, you know, redheaded girl in her underwear winning HOH during Big Brother 12 and, you know, against all odds, and then saying, who wants to see my HOH? You know, I love that aspect of Big Brother, and we just don't get that anymore. So, you know, I'm calling
my shot, though, Brent. I think if Tiffany wins in HOH here coming up soon, and there are pictures of her mom, we will get that segment strictly for the fact that we will also get James fawning over her mother, being like, "Oh man, your mom is so hot." I can't do a James impression, but you get what I'm saying.
Can we talk about Taryn's tweet earlier? I think it was today or yesterday, where he said, "Seriously, have we not gone a complete episode without a James prank?" And then we've had four or five episodes. Taryn, you talked about
that on the podcast. It's a really interesting thing.
Oh, you said it last night. I'm sorry. I have one show.
He said it on the podcast. Yeah. It is interesting that every episode we're filling that James quota by getting that one prank and filling that in there.
That glorious moment, maybe they're going to show it a little bit out of order on Wednesday's show, where Tiffany was just totally breaking down the fact that Victor was going to nominate her, how her alliance then told her, which we haven't even talked about. How have we not even talked about this? The fact that her alliance told her, you know, you cannot win the veto, or if you do, you cannot use it on yourself. Danielle Reyes and Vanessa were going at it on Twitter, saying with Danielle saying, of course she should go for the veto. And Vanessa was like, I would like to talk to you about that. I think that's a good idea that she shouldn't go for the veto this week. And, you know, they never really had that conversation, but they had it on Twitter. I personally, if we come to Wednesday's show and we find out that Tiffany actively threw the veto competition, I really am going to have to question her sanity as a good player, because who the hell cares who goes out this week? Take another piece out of the Jenga board, okay? It doesn't matter. Victor is not that big of a threat. You're asking me, if I'm Tiffany, you're asking me to sit on the block with the possibility of being evicted, with people like Frank in the house who you know does not like you, and you're going to ask me to throw the veto competition? I mean, what do you guys think about that? Alex, I haven't even heard what you thought about the whole Tiffany trying to be asked to throw the veto competition.
Well, first, Brent, let's backtrack a little bit here. So Tiffany was asked by the Alliance to throw the competition, Alex. That's what happened. And so now we're not 100% sure if, in fact, that's what she did.
Mm-hmm, pretty much. I mean, I would assume she probably did. I mean,
we have reason to believe she didn't. Dave Vaughn was kind of upset because it seemed as though Tiffany was not throwing the competition.
I thought she was just trying to beat Dave Vaughn.
I feel like Dave Vaughn was always going to be Dave.
But people did comment that it did seem like Tiffany was trying a little bit harder than they wanted her to. So we won't know for sure either way.
Well, they told her she could win the competition, but she can't use it on herself. She would have to. Can you imagine? She wins the veto competition and then vetoes off Paul or something.
I'd rather lose. Yeah. Right.
Oh my gosh.
I do understand the reasoning behind it. Right. The problem is that that people thought Victor was going to nominate James, and James immediately volunteered, I'm going to throw the power veto, I'm going to use it on somebody else, showed himself to be a loyal member of the Alliance. Then it switched to Tiffany, and people were already concerned about Tiffany. She freaked out. She talked about not trusting Frank. And then it was like, hey, Tiffany, you know you need to throw the comp, just like James was going to do. And she's already on the outs. She needs to do something to win their favor. So I do understand the reasoning behind why she might have done it. However, I still don't think she should have done it, because As we've seen, it hasn't really helped her win any favor, and she's still in way more danger than she should be. If she has that veto, then she has some sort of leverage, some sort of power in the game that people might start coming to her. I think it's worth the risk to take it, to take that veto, and not worth the risk to stay up on the block, because you don't know how people are going to react to it either way. And having your safety is much better. And people are going to be like, oh, we couldn't get Victor, but they're not going to care next week.
Totally. Yeah, really did her no favors that James created that precedent. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's important to know yourself. And I feel like this is the girl that told us preseason that she thinks she's going to have trouble throwing competitions because she's a very competitive person. Like, if you know that about yourself, then maybe you don't commit to that on any level with your alliance because you know that you're not going to be able to, or you find some way to like just kind of navigate that without making a promise that you don't know that you're going to be able to keep, because that's the line I think that gets you into trouble, is when you start promising things and not delivering. Your word kind of devalues.
I'm really hoping that we go to Wednesday's show and that she's privately telling us in the diary room, look, I don't care what my line says. I'm going to try and go out and win this veto. And if I win it, I'm going to take myself off the block. They can deal with the consequences. I need to take care of myself and my safety in this house. I'm really hoping we get that on Wednesday, but I'm dubious whether or not we're going to.
I think we will. I honestly do.
All right, we'll see.
I think Tiffany's a smart cookie. I don't think she's concerned about self-preservation. She's not. I don't really think she's not one of these people who's a quote unquote team player. And there's nothing wrong with that. She's looking out for number one herself, which she should be doing.
Thank you.
And I can't see her making that mistake. We'll find out on Wednesday. It'll be interesting, but I would be surprised if she did that. Would I be surprised if one of these other newbies did that? No, but I have higher expectations for Tiffany.
I do have something I want to throw out there about this the roadkill nomination. People have talked about, Victor should have nominated himself to ensure that he could play in the veto so he wouldn't get backdoored. And I've been thinking about it, and I do think, nominating himself is probably a better idea than nominating any random person, just because he at least then gets to play in the veto. But if I was thinking, like, what would I do in this scenario? Because it is kind of an interesting thing. It takes a lot of guts to nominate yourself, especially if you're not sure that you're going to be backdoored. So what I was thinking was, obviously, Victor needs to be way smarter about it. Right from the get-go, tell absolutely nobody that you won the roadkill, and then nominate Frank. Nominate Frank without anybody knowing who did it, and then watch Frank. Frank is totally going to compete to win that veto. He's going to be paranoid because nobody's copping to it that he's going to get backdoored by his own alliance. He's going to want to win that veto, use it on himself, and then you don't have to put yourself at risk. You let Frank win the veto for you. He's probably going to be better at winning the veto anyway. He takes himself off, and then you get to name the replacement, and you're safe from eviction.
Yeah, that's definitely right. If you're unwilling to name yourself, then definitely the next best option is try to find a way to control the replacement nominee.
He couldn't nominate Frank because Frank's on Polly's team.
But Category four.
The thing with people, Ian saying that Victor, even Ian Terry tweeted that Victor should nominate himself. First of all, I agree with him. That's in a perfect world, that's a great, great strategy. But two things. I'm a super fan, and I didn't even consider it for like the first 20 minutes until I heard Ian tweet that. I'm like, oh yeah, that kind of does make sense. And number two, Victor is not a fan of this show. He was like totally recruited at some open casting call somewhere. He doesn't know what Big Brother's about. So how to say, oh, well, he should have known, he should have nominated himself. I didn't even think of that. And three, we don't even know if production would have let him. I think they would have let him nominate himself, but there's no evidence that they might not have said, well, no, you can't nominate yourself since you won the competition. So who knows?
Yeah, and if he couldn't nominate Frank, then nominate someone like Corey. Somebody who's want to win this veto to save themselves just in case they're getting, backdoored by somebody.
And then, and there's always the opportunity for like little seeds, like how you feeling, man? You know what I mean? Just like little things that would incentivize Corey to feel a need to win it. You know what I mean? Like there's ways to approach this that could maximize your chances of getting to name that nominee. And if you get to name that nominee, then you can make sure it isn't you.
Yeah, Victor has a finance degree, right? So, I mean, he should be able to figure this stuff out without even really being a fan, Alex. So, I don't really get what's going on there.
Well, we saw you the basic maths down. I don't know if we can expect him to, have a, Vanessa Russo degree in game, theoretically speaking.
Yes. Okay, we got two more questions here before we wrap things up. Great conversation tonight, guys. Really, really digging what we're talking about here. Lots of great information here. This one is a good one and an interesting one that I am curious about. This one comes from at Jay Duramo on Twitter. I'll throw this to you, Alex. Considering that there's always something that can be done, what could Victor do to stay? That's part A. Part B, this is a different one. This was from Evelyn Ferguson at NFGC86. She says, what are the chances of Victor being able to flip the vote? I think that's the bigger question. Is there any chance? Does Victor have a hope in hell of surviving this week? Can he get some of the, you know, Frank to go after Tiffany while she's still on the block? Or is this kind of a lost cause?
Well, that's the thing that I think to me speaks about how much of a lost cause it is. The fact that Tiffany is sitting there, you know, like a juicy Christmas turkey waiting to be taken down, and no one's willing to take the shot even now because they feel like it's too soon and Victor's like, you know what I mean? Like, the fact that she's there, I mean, everything that he could do to incentivize, I think, is there. I don't know, you know, it's tough. Like, he's in such a hole. There's really, you know, there's things he could try, and I think he is trying some of them, which, you know, I give him credit for not laying down. Like, he's not just gone to bed today. He's actually, he's tried to campaign. He's gone up and made a pitch to Nicole. You know, he's doing more. He's doing the kinds of things we like to see from someone who's, you know, about to be backdoored. He's trying to fight for his life in the game. He's just, you know, he's playing catch up to such a degree that, like, the fix was in, you know, last week, let alone this week. Like, he's so far behind the eight ball that it's virtually impossible. Right. The only scenario is like some kind of, yeah, something somehow turns on Tiffany, some kind of, you know, Tiffany Davon blow up that gets Davon like saying, all right, enough is enough. It has to be now. You know, that's the only, short of that. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. If you're asking, can Victor get the votes to stay? The answer is no. Will votes go in Victor's favor? Maybe, like, there's a small chance, but it will have nothing to do with Victor, right? Like,
could he, like, maybe, like, right, move something of Davon, like, take something of Davon's and hide it and, like, say Tiffany did it? Or, like, I don't know. Is there any way to frame, to stoke this flame? Like,
well, the problem with Victor is Victor thinks he's staying again. Yeah. Like, he thinks that he has the votes to get Tiffany out. Like, he's falling for it a second time.
After getting backdoored, yes, he still, oh my God.
He got blindsided on the Jose vote, then got backdoored, and he's like, it's cool though. I'm safe. I have the votes. I've talked to Nicole. I've talked to Day. They're all on board to take Tiffany out.
That's the problem with being an honest, straight up guy in a snake pit full of liars, is you just, you don't know what you're in there for.
That's the thing. I don't understand why Frank won't consider it. Like, you know, he knows that Tiffany's coming after him. He knows that Victor would be loyal to him if he was saved by Frank. So I'm not really sure why he's not really considering going after her this week. I guess maybe they're all thinking the same thing, which is if we go after Tiffany and we break up the eight pack, then everyone's just going to scatter and none of us are going to have safety. I think that's probably what everyone's thinking, and they just don't want to pull the trigger right now.
I think the problem is, again, these twists, right? Like, these twists incentivize these big alliances to stick together. If these twists weren't in place, I think we would see Tiffany going home. Or granted, Tiffany might not be up on the block, but again, Victor might have been the HOH, so maybe she would have been up on the block. Like, the problem is that it is too early to take Tiffany out, because there's no need to break up this majority alliance yet. They can keep continuing to have the majority and have virtually no chance of any of them being sent home unless they choose it, right? So it's not likely that it's ever going to happen. Something that I think that Polly and Frank should be considering is trying to get somebody like Bronte out instead of Victor, because, you know, we're talking about these lines being drawn by gender, and, you know, it's dicey to lose the third guy in a row to these votes and have all of the girls remaining. These girls are willing to work with each other to get out the guys. They just don't realize that the other side is willing, right? Like, they think the other side is working with the guys, so they're afraid to go over and talk to them. But it could happen that they join together at some point, and that spells huge trouble for these guys. And again, this is Frank's biggest blind spot.
And even if you're like Frank and you don't believe that there's any chance the girls are working together on a girls thing, it should still concern you somewhat to go down five guys to eight girls. I mean, I believe it was Brian Heidick, the winner of Survivor Thailand, who says that no matter how the group dynamic breaks down, you want to find yourself in the majority. So you want to be in the majority based on age, based on gender, based on you know, every way you can break down a group dynamic, you want to try find yourself in that majority. And if you're not, you want to change the group dynamic so that you are. You know what I mean? And by taking out a third guy in a row, they're changing the group dynamic and enabling the women to take them out. So that's, you know, whether or not they see it now, whether or not it'll actually happen, remains to be seen. But the fact is that they're handing them the keys to the truck. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah. Whether or not they want to drive the boys off a cliff is their prerogative.
Yeah. And the good thing for them is that I don't know if they're capable of doing that drive, right? Like, Day is getting herself way too involved. The other side is way too scared of talking to the other side. So it's not likely that we're going to see this happen, but the door is wide open.
All right. Last question for the evening.
Last question. I'm here all night.
You're here all night. Oh, well Brent, it's Independence Day. People have things to do. For real though. We'll do one more after this. How about that? We'll do one more after this. Two more questions.
I just remember last week we did it for an hour and people were like, "Why are you guys only doing it for an hour? I want to hear you guys talk for a little bit longer." So I was like, just trying to give them what they want. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I actually did have someone in the chat say they want us to go for 3 hours.
Well, I can't do 3 hours.
I actually have plans at 8 Pacific, and right now it's 7:37.
But this is good. We've gotten a lot of information. I can't get through this in the show with Rob and another guest. So I love being on the show with you guys.
Okay, good.
I love the other guests. I'm just like, I can't, my thoughts can't come together that quickly when I'm talking with people who don't really watch the feeds. It's just how it is.
Yeah. No, this is good. I like this dynamic. It's very
JP,
fun.
JP, you got a midnight screening of Legend of Tarzan to get to?
No, actually.
You're going to go with Corey to look at those abs?
I guess I could.
Oh my gosh! Wait. I love that you brought that up. So did you see that Polly came into the HRH room and he said to Corey, "This is the second time I've come in here and you are watching Frank shower." Like, and you see like Frank's ass. Yes. He's looking directly at Frank's ass.
I was laughing at that tweet.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
And then earlier today,
Davon was like saying, "You know that boy's gay, right?"
Yeah.
Like, far be it for me to question someone's sexuality, but if it walks like a duck, I have
Twitter open, and at the beginning of the show, I saw that tweet, and I was laughing as you guys were talking. I wasn't listening to what you were saying.
Well, maybe Corey will, we'll all feel better for him. Maybe he'll experience some kind of spiritual awakening when he gets out of the house.
All right. I'll help him.
Happier for it.
I'll help him. Okay. Second to last question. This one is from, on a lighter note, this one is from Mike Bloom. He says, "Hey guys, who's celebrating Independence Day in the most American way?" In terms of, I don't know if he was asking us or in terms of the house. I'm assuming a friend of the podcast, Mike Bloom, was referring to the house guest. So would it be Frank for getting incredibly intoxicated? Would that count?
Oh, yeah. He's not only on his fourth glass of sangria, but he's refilling the sangria with Sprite so that it looks like that there's nothing really gone from it, even though he's like tipsy as all hell. So, yeah. It's pretty funny. I have to give it to Frank because that's the American way, is to drink yourself to death on Independence Day.
My favorite part was when he asked Nicole like 3 this afternoon, like, "Do you think we should break it in the sangria?" When they'd been drinking for like 4 hours already. Like,
right?
Man.
I do believe Victor is wearing an American flag T-shirt, so I might have to go Victor.
Ooh, okay, so maybe Victor. Okay, Alex, I'll let you be the tiebreaker then. Victor or Frank?
What's more patriotic, the flag or booze? Yeah, real catch 22 there. Man. Who was working the grill? I can't remember. Anyone?
I don't know. Who is working the grill? Did they get a grill?
I've turned off the feeds for this podcast.
Yeah, I know, right? That should be the, like, if Frank is making steaks right now, then that's the tiebreaker. But I'll go with the flag because otherwise it sounds really tawdry.
Okay, so Victor might be going out the door, but he is the most patriotic on the 4th of July. So congrats, Victor, for that. Okay, we got one more. This one came from, I had it up here. Yeah, here we go. This one is from Matt Forsyth, at Matt Forsyth 1 on Twitter. He says, "Hey guys, who is in an underrated spot in the house right now?" So we will, that'll be the last question for the night. I'm curious as to what you guys each have to say. Brent, let's start with you.
An underrated spot, I would probably have to say Zakiya. That would probably be the most underrated. I think we have, she's probably the one we've talked about the least, and I think she's probably in the best position in the house, or at least in the top tier. Maybe Nicole is in the best position in the house, but Zakiya is definitely right there. I hear a lot of people saying, "I want to bring Zakiya to the end." And I also have to say that I really love the dynamic between Devon and Zakiya. Earlier today, I think it was today, the days all blend together when you're watching the feed, so I apologize. I think it was today, Day and Zakiya were saying, you know, we have to take each other to the end. And Zakiya's like, you know, don't worry, girl, I got you. It's totally understood. Like they're connecting on such a basic spiritual level that I would really love to see Devon and Zakiya in the final two. I know it probably won't happen, but I can dream.
That would be a beautiful thing. Taryn, let's go to you. Who's most underrated for you right now?
Underrated. It's difficult because I like underrated from the fans' perspective, right? Or like, from in the house?
Yeah, I would say from the fans, the general fan perspective, who is in an underrated position right now? I think Brent's Zakiya choice. I think that fits the bill for me. Someone like that.
I think it might be Nicole. I haven't seen a lot of people talking about Nicole, at least from my perspective. So I might say Nicole, because I do think she's probably in the best position and nobody's really talking about her in that way.
Okay, there we go. Alex, we'll end it off with you then. Most underrated position in the house and why?
I probably would have said Zakiya for the simple fact that, right, you don't see a lot of people talking about her, but I talked about her on the last show I did, that I thought she's in a great spot, so... given that she's not underrated for me, I'll go with someone else and I'll pick Michelle, because I think Michelle is someone that is in a great spot. People don't see her like being actively social or like doing anything really on the feed. So people don't see her as like someone that's probably going to be a late game player. But she absolutely has winner's equity and potential to go the distance in this game. She's just really, like I said, she's really benefited by the fact that she's already has found herself in the big majority, and the big majority doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So she doesn't really need to put in that level of legwork the way other people kind of have to. She can kind of, you know, do what Devon should be doing right now, which is just taking it easy and, you know, having a lot of non-game related talks. And, you know, the few game related conversations she does have are really more about, like, you know, fan pages she's made for past house guests and stuff like that. So, like, she's doing that's the right approach as a super fan, is to, like, you know, talk about how you're a fan from, like, the total fan perspective, not like the strategic perspective. So I'm liking a lot of what I'm seeing from Michelle, even if I don't love everything about her social game.
All right. Well, I think Taryn. Okay.
There's one more thing because we're getting a lot of requests in the chat to talk about this.
Yes.
There is something that went down. And this is potentially the reason why Devon has been so bullish on Tiffany, is that she mentioned that in the secret room, meaning the DR.
Devon,
yeah. Yes. She was able to glean some information that she shouldn't trust Tiffany. She mentioned this to the rest of the girls in the Fatal Four now, and was later brought into the DR and came out saying, yeah, I got in trouble. I need to say that I didn't get any information from the DR, and that is not affecting strategy in any way.
Yeah. Yeah. She had to like recant the statement to everyone who had heard it. She had to go to Nicole and go to Zakiya and like make it very clear that the DR did not influence her. I'm sure it was like the way a question was worded, because the way she said it, it was like they asked me something and it was the, you know, something that just made me go, hold up, wait a minute. You know what I mean? So like I wouldn't be shocked if that's accurate, if something they said led her to thinking something about Tiffany. But, yeah, she's not allowed to use that to enhance or to forward her strategy in any way. The DR made that explicitly clear.
Right,
yeah,
but two things. Number one, she did a really half-assed job of telling those three people, oh, by the way, like, I didn't really mean that. And, you know, like what
they
you
said,
saw happen,
I can't
it
say
didn't
it.
Happen.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
It's like when a lawyer says something and then, like, in order for it to be objected to, but it's like,
right,
ah,
but
it's still
he still
there.
Got through, exactly.
Right.
And the other
You're not
thing
sorry you did it. You're sorry you got caught. Yeah.
Was if Devon did get something from the DR in the way a question was worded, she's totally shooting herself in the foot by telling other people that, because if they were doing that previously, they ain't gonna help her now. So, well, girl, why don't you tell everybody about that?
Well, I will say this. I mean, I would agree with that, and I think anybody saying, like, oh, they, like, blatantly told her stuff. No, I think I'm with you guys 100%. You know, as somebody who has played before, I can tell you now retroactively going back to certain points in my game, Based on how I was asked things, I could pull it makes sense why I was asked certain questions because of things that may have been going on in the house. So for returning players, you definitely can pick up on things that newbies would not necessarily pick up on, just because, they haven't experienced the game before and they haven't experienced, being voted out and how all this other stuff goes on. So, interesting stuff by Dave Vaughn, but,
it should be pointed out.
Yeah. Yes, go ahead, Terry.
Well, it should be pointed out, I don't think that Day interpreted this correctly. I think that Devon was very paranoid and misinterpreted whatever she was getting from the DR.
Why would they ask her any question that implicates Tiffany? Because Tiffany hasn't gone really against Devon yet.
Right. Tiffany has talked about how much she trusts. We don't see Tiffany as targeting Devon. So.
Tiffany trusts Devon. She's talked about trusting Devon, but Devon is 100% convinced, partially because of this DR thing, that she can't trust Tiffany, which is a big mistake for Day.
Right. And Tiffany wants the 8-girl alliance.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. A Day making mistakes. I'm stunned. I'm actually floored. I can't believe it. Okay. Well, I think
one quick. I'm so sorry.
Hold up.
Time out. Okay.
Jordan's gonna miss his Tarzan premiere.
I was gonna give you guys each one like last word, but okay, I will give you each one last word. Taryn just used his. Brent, I'll let you use yours, and Alex, I'll give you one, and then I have to go.
I don't understand how Frank and these other boys are not aware of people like Natalie and Bronte, who are such into the girl power thing, I want women to succeed kind of thing, because they've basically let it be known that that's how they're thinking. And two, I don't understand people like Devon and Zakiya and these other people who are actively targeting people like Natalie and Bronte and whoever, like people like Nicole, because they are going to vote for a girl over a boy in the final two if it gets to that point. And since that's most likely what it's going to end up as, keep people like that in the game. Get rid of people like Paul, people who are going to be used by Frank later on. I don't know why they don't do that.
Yeah. Alex, you got anything on that?
Well, I think the guys, especially Frank, they're really coasting on this idea that is in the general, thought of the Big Brother fandom, which is that the girls can't have a successful alliance. And he's just like, he's taking that as fact and he's not investigating based on the details. And that's a big mistake.
Right. And then also this idea that, Brent, you talked about earlier, which is like breaking the suit. You know, like if you go against... Like, there's a status quo set up right now where the next four out in some order is Victor, Paul, Bronte, Bridget, Natalie, the next five, unless something changes. If you change that, you might be able to get out someone you want out more this week, but you've set the precedent that now, we can turn ourselves inward. Like, if you're the first one to do that, then don't be surprised if you're the victim of that same move the very next week. And I don't think anyone wants to be the one who's seen as, the instigator of, flipping it basically from the beginning stages of the game to the mid game, which is what that kind of would be.
All right. This is, usually I like to transition from one person to the next, but Alex, I told you you'd have the last word, my friend. So is there anything else you'd like to touch upon before we wrap things up for today?
Sure. Yeah. One last thing. Just, as Brent talked about, Day and Zakiya, very close, very clearly on the same page. Good in many ways, very loyal to each other. Also reminds me a bit of the Jason Roy and Devon dynamic where they're sitting isolated the two of them quite a bit, just kind of talking about other people. Devon does this with Nicole a bit too. It's almost like she has a bunch of Jason Roys in there, a bunch of people she can talk to and vent about other people with. The problem will be when they start playing a game of telephone with each other. They're not doing that yet, as we talked about, but she's fallen in a good spot because she has all these people she can work with. I just worry that, we saw that was almost a problem for her last time where she was too comfortable with a couple people. And then it was so overtly obvious to everyone. That's a pair. You know what I mean? So that's a bit of the problem for me. It's when you see all eight of them get in a room together, when you see Devon and Zakiya in a room together all day, these things are going to start being associated with her. Labels of her being someone who's not solo dolo, as Vanessa always tried to sell herself.
Devon and Frank, to a large extent, they're playing in rooms full of gasoline, and it's just one little spark and their whole games are going to be blown up.
That's a wow. You know, I was going to say that Alex was really killing it with all the analogies tonight, Taryn, but nicely done. I like that one. Yeah, the rooms.
I like
the
that
gasoline.
One, too. Metaphors aren't my forte, but you guys do great. Yeah.
No, you got that's why Brent. That's why, you know, we'll leave that for Taryn and Alex. And, I'll ask the questions. You get really passionate about stuff and it all works out.
It's good that I'm podcasting. I finally have an outlet for all my stupid metaphors. Cause my friends are tired of them.
Yes, and your Germany, World War II, whatever the hell.
Oh, my gosh. That was great,
I was living for that when I was driving to work the other day.
I can't take full credit for that. I just was a binging Band of Brothers. So it was like on the brain.
I love it. I love it when you started talking about it and Rob was like, whoa.
I think he was worried about where I was taking it.
Right? I know, right? And he was like, okay.
Okay. Well, thank you to everybody for tuning in to another edition of the Reality TV Happy Hour. Lots of fun discussion tonight. I just had so much fun chatting with these guys, as always. If you're not already, don't forget to follow the live feed correspondence. Alex is at Alex Kidwell. Brent is at One Lucky Gay. And Taryn is at Armstrong. Taryn, not at Taryn Armstrong. That's a different guy. I am at Jordan Parhar. I'm just trying to think of what else I want to touch upon. Hashtag ideas, guys. Anyone have a hashtag for tonight? No? Anything on the mind? I mean, I was thinking earlier Brent just said he just called out Frank and he just said, "You bitch." And I thought that was very funny.
Can't
hashtag
you
hashtag you bitch. But yeah, probably can't use that.
I'm seeing hashtag JP delivers
from Wes in the chat. Yeah, I saw Alex was in the chat room and he was saying that I'm an ice cream delivery boy. Like I drive an ice cream truck.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you said that in the chat. And then you also said, like, the reason that I have to leave is that because I have to go deliver some ice cream.
No, you're going to see me. I was making Skarsgård. Legend of Tarzan jokes.
Yeah. Oh, was that not you in the chat? Okay, no. I could have sworn that was you in the chat. That was
framed.
Someone else in the chat.
I'm framed. I didn't do this.
You're being impersonated.
You were being impersonated like I was being impersonated on the BB live feeds. and by the way, I will be on those probably tomorrow at some point. I'll be in their RHAP chat room. It's Jordan B. Parhar. That's me in there because some asshole took Jordan Parhar.
Someone impersonated you in that chat room,
too?
Yeah. Someone impersonated me.
Oh, wait. I have a question. So, like,
if people reach out to me on Twitter telling me that, like, we had such a great conversation, and I'm like,
at least it's good conversation, right?
Like, if you take some name, can somebody else take your name? Like, because I'm currently Brent from Rap on there. Like,
you can change it. You can change it.
I think if no one's logged in, they can take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, if I'm not logged in, they can take it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can they?
I think.
I don't know. Because it's always there when I go back. Like, I don't have to re-put it in.
No,
so.
I think once you have it, you have it. Because I've tried to get Jordan Parhar back, but I can't get it back. So.
Oh, okay, cool. All
right. Yeah, yeah. All right. Anyway, okay, we had, I'm looking at, okay, so JP delivers, hashtag Frank undercut Pizzagate, hashtag you bitch Frank, hashtag box of rocks, hashtag tinkering Dave Vaughn. This is just making for some great podcasting here. I'm cool with
JP delivers. I think
JP delivers.
You want to go with that? JP delivers. Okay, JP delivers. So we will go with hashtag JP delivers. And for the record, I work for a party rental company. That's what I've been doing this summer.
Look, party
I deliver.
Down.
Party.
Yeah, so I deliver like tables and chairs and like things like that. Not like fun parties, like rich old people parties.
Okay,
so
all right.
Yeah, so
that
so
was
not really
like
that fun.
Party down.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not really.
You make
that.
Your own.
Why would
Jordan.
I say you delivered ice cream? Who delivers ice cream?
Somebody delivers ice cream. Somebody said that I was driving an ice cream truck, like you know, like the.
So you're like delivering to parks and soccer
exactly.
fields. I gotcha.
Exactly. So I could have sworn that was you, but I guess it was not. I guess somebody has like a similar avatar to you in the chat there, Alex. But anyway, enough nonsense. If you enjoyed this episode of the Happy Hour, you can. Subscribe by going to robizowebsite.com/happyhour. That's happy hour with an R at the front. While you're there, you can leave a rating and a review. And for everybody who does so at the end of the season, you'll get your name thrown into a hat to win a 30-minute Skype call with me. I did a couple of those at the end of the BB Camp 4 season. It was really fun. So looking forward to doing that again at the end of this season. So if you've already done one already, you don't need to worry. you're already in the draw. But if you want to, feel free to go ahead. One other programming note, if you are going to be listening to RHAP this week, Rob is going to be away in Chicago getting ready for RapCon. He's also at the Podcast Movement Conference. So Wednesday night, I will be on Rob as a podcast hosting, filling in for Rob. Alex and I will be there. We were talking about getting a guest today. I don't really know if we're going to be able to put something together in time. So him and I will talk about that offline. But Thursday, I will be back again as well after the episode with Brent and Ian Terry. So Brent, we're getting a whole, the gang is getting back together. Brent and Ian will be back on together on Thursday.
The battle, the battle for Michelle's affection.
Yes, me versus Ian. So that should be a really fun podcast. I just had a good chat with Ian on Skype last week. We were talking about his teaching gig and the season and everything. So this should be a really fun podcast. Really looking forward to that. Okay, guys. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Happy Hour. Thanks for joining us. We will see you next week. For Alex Kidwell, Brent Wagama, and Taryn Armstrong, I'm Jordan Parhar. Hashtag JP delivers. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Peace out. The theme song of the reality TV Rehappy Hour is written and performed by Ryan Elder. Check out more of his work at ryanelder.com.